The Torah tells us in the end of Chumash Bamidbar that after the battle with Midian, the Jewish armies took possession of all of the pots and pans that the Midianim soldiers had used to cook their non-kosher foods in. And the mitzvah was required of them, the Torah, the halacha required of them, that they should kasher all of these pots and pans before they would use them for cooking kosher food. The reason why kosherization was necessary was because we assume that the Torah is assuming that the pots and pans have a bliya, they absorb the flavor of the non-kosher foods, the chazra and whatever other non-kosher foods the Midianim had cooked that day. And if the Jewish soldiers would cook kosher food in the pots now, the non-kosher bliya would come out into the kosher food, and this would make the kosher food osur b'achila. This is the principle of tam kikar, that even if I can only taste the flavor of the non-kosher food that was mixed in, I don't declare that it should be bottled berov, since it's less, despite the fact that it's less than 50% of the mixture, since it's nice and tam, since it enhances the flavor of the new kosher food that I'm eating. So the halacha says that that too is not kosher. The Chumash tells us that there are two forms of kashering non-kosher cooking utensils. One is hagola and one is libun. Hagola is sufficient. Hagola means if I take the non-kosher pot and I put it into burning hot water for a few seconds, we assume that the treif ablia that was absorbed into the defanus of the kli, into the walls of the vessel, will go out into the water and the pot will be kosher. So hagola is sufficient. If the non-kosher bliya was absorbed into the pot originally, ayde bishul. If I cooked, let's say, non-kosher soup or something where there was a liquid, so then hagola is sufficient. If, however, the non-kosher bliya was absorbed into the pot by broiling or by baking, let's say I baked some non-kosher bread on a baking tin, or I broiled the non-kosher cheese, or I broiled the non-kosher meat on a broiler, so then hagola would not be sufficient. Libun would be required. This is the principle that the Talmud formulates with the expression kibolo kach polto. The same way the blia was absorbed, that's how it's removed from the pot. If the blia was absorbed be'emtzos hamashkim via liquid, so then hagola would be sufficient to take the non-kosher pot and to put it into burning hot water. But if the blia was absorbed be'emtzos hamayim, without any liquid in being in the pot, it was absorbed by direct baking or broiling, so then we would require libun. The Talmud points out that there is a problem, that the Chumash in Parshas Tzav has also a bit of a din regarding koshering, kosherization of pots. There the Torah is not talking about non-kosher food that was cooked in a pot. The Chumash speaks of a korban chatos that was cooked in a pot, or broiled on a broiler. The korban chatos can only be eaten by kohanim, by zichri kohanim, male kohanim, yom v'layla, only on the day on which the korban chatos was brought, and the night following. So the Chumash requires that the kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash have to kasher these broilers where the korban was broiled on, in order that tomorrow, whenever you have the korban chatos, they can only be eaten yom v'layla, today and tonight. So when it comes tomorrow morning, alos ha-shachar, the blia that's absorbed in the broiler will become treif because of noisar. It was sitting overnight in the kli. Just like if you would have a lamb chop from the korban chatos that stayed overnight, it would become nifsal belina, it would become an isa noisar. So if you have the blia that's absorbed, the flavor of the korban chatos that was absorbed into the broiler will also become nifsal belina and become osamitam noisar. So the halacha requires that every single day the kohanim have to kasher the pots in which they use for broiling that day's korban chatos, in order that when they broil tomorrow's korban chatos, it won't have a bli of yesterday's noisar. So there the Chumash does not say that sometimes hagol is sufficient and sometimes libun is required. You get the impression as if it's always sufficient with hagol. There's never any need to kasha by burning out with a fire. So the Gemara in the last daf in Maseches Avodah Zarah raises this issue. So the accepted answer that the Gemara gives halacha lamaisa is that in Parshas Tzav, the Chumash is speaking about a situation where we cooked a kosher korban chatos. At the time that we were broiling it on the broiler, it was kosher. That's heterabola. It was mutar b'achila. The only thing is that tomorrow morning it'll become nifsal belino, so it'll turn into an isa noisar. So in order to prevent it from becoming noisar, the Gemara says, the Chumash tells us in such a case, it's sufficient with hagola. But in the end of Chumash by Midbar, after the Jewish armies won the war against Midian, and they had to kosherize the pots and pans that they took from the Midianim, there we are concerned that the Midianim probably used it for Isura Bola. They broiled chaza, they broiled basa b'cholav on these broilers. So since when it was absorbed into the pot, from the very beginning, from the very outset, it was Isura Bola, so therefore, if the b'liya was al-yidei ho'esh, b'liya m'tzolos ha'mayim, then the Chumash would require a libun. Why exactly should we distinguish between hetera bola and isura bola? Why does it make a difference? So the Ran in Chulin, in his commentary on the Rif, explains as follows, that the Gemara draws a distinction between not banati hetera as opposed to not banati isura. That's how all the commentaries on the Gemara understand. Not banat means like this. It's the Rosh Tevis. It stands for the words nois and tam. Bar nois and tam means the following. If I cooked some milk in a pot, and I poured out all the milk, and I washed out the pot, so all I have left now is a bliya of the milk and the doifne hakdeira in the walls of the pot. Now I cook some water in that pot, so that water will absorb some of the flavor of the milk. So the milk that was balua in the pot, and I washed out the pot, that's called tam rishon. That's considered an asinas tam, a flavoring of the milk in the pot. Now that I washed out the pot and I cook plain old water in the pot, so the water is called tam sheni. The water absorbs the flavor from the pot. So let's say I take this water and I pour it burning hot into a third kli, into a third container. So the bliya goes from the water now into the container. That's already nois and tam bar nois and tam bar nois and tam. It's the third nesinas tam. And now let's say I pour out all of that water. I wash out this new pot. Now I'm going to cook some meat in the pot. So would one say that the meat that I cooked in the pot becomes treif because of basa b'cholav? Because it was a bliya of milk that went from the original pot into the water, from the water into the second pot, and now from the pot into the meat, and that meat now becomes basa b'cholav. So the Gemara says no, that's permissible, because that's a nesinas tam, bar nesinas tam. So the Rishonim say that this kula of nois and tam, bar nois and tam, if it's so far removed, this heter only applies if you're dealing with hetera bola. You're talking about kosher milk that didn't become treif yet. You're discussing whether the meat will become treif later on. So we say, if you have a nois and tam, bar nois and tam of hetera, so this is not sufficient to create a problem of an isa, to create an isa. But let's say I have a pot where I cooked some non-kosher food, outright isura bola. So then I'll wash out the pot, I'll rinse out the pot, everything will be clean, and I'll cook some water there. So we assume the water will absorb the flavor of the non-kosher chaza that was originally cooked in the pot. Then if I'll pour this burning hot water onto another pot, we'll assume that that'll make that pot treif. Then if I'll cook some kosher food in that second pot, that kosher food might also become treif, because we say not bar not, and sinas tam, bar sinas tam, bar sinas tam, even if it's 100 times over, is able to convey, to transmit the tam, and this would be sufficient to transmit the yisa. So the Ran explains that these two dinim are based on the same principle, namely, why is it we're mekel and not banat the hetera and not banat the isura we're machma? Why are we mekel in hetera bola if the pot absorbed milk, or if the pot absorbed the korban chatas, which was kosher today? So then we say we never would require a libun, even if the milk, even if the cheese was broiled, even if the lamb chops were broiled on a broiler, we would never require libun. Hagola would be sufficient. As opposed to an instance where it would be isura bala, if I broiled chazer on the broiler, then libun would be required. So the Ran explains in his commentary on the Rif that both of these dinim are based on the same principle, that when you'll do hagola on a pot that really required libun, the overwhelming majority of the tam will leave the pot. The little bit of tam that will be remaining in the pot is considered a tam kolosh, a weak tam. So the halacha distinguishes regarding a tam kolosh. If it already is osir with dealing with some iser that was nivla into the pot, and now I've done hagola in a situation where I really required libun. So then we declare that all that's left is a tam kolish, and a tam kolish is not enough that an iser, that it should create an iser a basa b'cholov. Or if I'll do hagola on a pot in which I broiled a korban chatos. So it doesn't become noiser until it comes alos ha-shachar of the next morning. So if I'll do hagola before it becomes alos ha-shachar, before it becomes noiser, so then once you do hagola on a pot that really required libun, so the tam that will remain will be so insignificant, we will consider that a tam kolush. And a tam kolush, an isa noiser cannot set in on a tam kolush. And the same is true regarding the not by not. When you have a nesinas tam by nesinas tam, a flavor was absorbed into a pot. Then it went from the pot into the water. Then it went from the water into another pot. So that's case happens to be a not by not by not. That's a third nesinas tam, or in some cases of not by not. Sometimes it's sufficient with the second nesinas tam. Different cases in Shulchan Aruch, when it's enough with two nesinas tams, when you have to have three times not by not by not. So we declare that a not by not by not is only a tam kolush. It's not such a strong tam. So if you're dealing with something that already is osur, so a tam kolush is sufficient to retain, to preserve an isa around it, to retain an isa. But if you're dealing with a hetera bola and you're discussing whether an isa can be chal on this tam kolush, so that's taloch. An isa cannot set in on a tam kolush. The Gemara points out that there is yet a third form of kashering non-kosher pots. That's milu v'yira gimel yomim. That's reserved for this. There's no pasuk in Chumash for this. This the Talmud develops, both the Talmud Bavli as well as the Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Talmud Bavli speaks about this in a case where you have barrels that absorbed stam yenom ayidei kovush. Usually we assume that there's no bliya if everything is cold, if everything is tzoinen, unless there's yatz or lettuce, unless there's a significant amount of heat involved. Unless something was soaking for more than 24 hours, then we apply the principle of kovush kemevushel, and a bliya will be absorbed into the pot. So let's say you have stam yenom, non-kosher wine, is sitting in a barrel for more than 24 hours, so we assume that a bliya will take place. So how does one remove that bliya from the barrel? So the Talmud Bavli points out that if you'll soak the barrels for 72 hours by alternating, by switching the water. Soak the barrel, the non-kosher barrels, for slightly more than 24 hours. Then you pour out all the water. Then you put in new water and you have it soak again for another amount of time, which is slightly more than 24 hours. Then you pour out that second bit of water and you soak the barrels a third time in a third unit of water for slightly more than 24 hours. So that's called milu v'yira gimel yomim. So this will succeed in removing the treifa bliya. So this is in the Talmud Bavli. This is, appears in the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah with respect to stam yenom. The Talmud Yerushalmi applies the same, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch LaHaloch and Hilchas Pesach. If you have barrels that absorb the chometz dekebliya bitzoinen, it was aydei kovush, so then we can kosherize those barrels for Pesach by soaking them for 72 hours, by switching the water every 24 hours, and so on. The Shachin Yerideya, in the second volume of Yerideya, points out that he thinks that this kula, this heter, of milu v'yira gimel yomim, only applies either in a case of stam yenom, because we have a lot of kulas regarding stam yenom, because it's only a chumra midirabonon, because we're concerned about nisui taruvis, mishum b'naseihem, or in the case of hetera bola, if, let's say, milk was absorbed into a container, ayidei kovush, or meat, kosher milk, or the Yerushalmi considers chometz kodem ha-pesach also as hetera bola. So that's why in these cases we are makel to say that ayidei mili v'yira gimel yomim, you can remove the treifa bliya. Let's say if you have a tanker that's traveling from one part of the country to the other, a truck that has a tank that contains liquid lard or something, and you say kovush kemevushel, then you're dealing with a real isa deraisa. That's not hetera bola, and it's not stam yenom that's kal. So there we would say that you cannot kosherize the non-kosher container by just doing milu v'yira gimel yomim. We would require a real hagola. Now this kula, this lenient position that milu v'yira gimel yomim helps, because the bliya was only ayidei kovush, The bli was bitzainen. There was nothing hot over here. So the Talmud is explicit that this heter even applies if the kelim that we're talking about are kli cheres, even though they're earthenware kelim, china, and we usually assume, as the Chumash seems to be telling us, HaTorah he'id al kli cheres. Torah tells us that we cannot assume that by doing Hagola to a kli cheres, we have removed the entire tray for bliya. But if the whole bliya was only bitzainen, so then it would be good even in the kli cheres. The Rishonim have a dispute in connection with this kula. What will the din be if you'll do Hagola on such a kli cheres? We normally assume Hagola does not help on a kli cheres. But what if the whole bliya was only a bliya bitzainen? And would have done the trick. If you would soak the pot for 72 hours, switching the water every 24 hours, that would have been enough. So there's a machlokes, a dispute in the Rishonim, whether Hagola can substitute Mili v'Yirigim Yomim, and they accept the opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch does not quote a machlokes. Shulchan Aruch quotes Lahokel, that we're makel on this. Taisus and Maseches Avodah Zarah points out that since it would have been enough with Mili v'Yirigim Yomim, because we're talking about a bliya b'tzainen, so even if you do a Hagola, you don't require a real Hagola b'kli Rishon, because the bliya was not ayidei kli rishon. The whole bliya was only ayidei kovish kemevushal. So Tosfos says it would even be good enough if you'll do a hagola ayidei irui, if you'll be pouring burning hot water from a kettle, from a pot, on every point in this barrel that had the stamyenim in it, or that had the chametz kedem ha-pesach, so that would also be sufficient. The Chazon Ish points out that normally we would require, it says in Shulchan Aruch, for the purpose of Hagola, we require that the water should be burning hot to the extent of Mala Resicha. It should be 212 degrees, or something very, very close to 212 degrees. It can't just be hot, burning hot. It has to be mamish bubbling, Mala Resicha. So here the Chazon Ish points out that if Tosfos is Mekel and we follow that Kula, that you can do Hagola Ayde Iri by pouring from a kettle, burning hot water on top of the barrels that have the bliya of Stam Yenam, or the barrels that have the chametzdika bliya, that was only nivla, ide kovush. So if you're pouring from another pot, so by definition, the temperature is going to be lower than 212. As long as the water is still in the klevishan that's on ta'agabi ho'esh, then you can require that the water for purposes of agola should be 212. But if you make, if you're so lenient to say you can pour burning hot water on top of the trefik kelim, so obviously it's going to be less than 212. So the Chazon Ish says in such a case, apparently it would be sufficient if the water is yad soled esbo. In the next installment, I'd like to discuss the exact definition of yad soled es and to complete the topic of kashering trefik kelim.